Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Dock Away is an educational art exhibit about the Wounded Knee Massacre of 1890. The Lakota word translates to the English word why. The exhibit includes work by Lakota artists and poets and musicians, and it includes not only historical and cultural context, but also a call to action for today. You can see the exhibit now through May 18th at the Dahl Art Center in Rapid City. Craig Howe is curator of the exhibit. He leads the Center for American Indian Research and Native Studies, and he's joining us today from the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio inside SDPB's Black Hills studio. Craig Howe, welcome back to In the Moment.
Thank you very much, Lori. Appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Let's start with the development of this exhibition, of this exhibit, including finding a name for it, because there have been books written about the massacre at Wounded Knee. There have been, you know, lectures and all kinds of things. Talk about naming the exhibit.
Well, that came about because of one of the artists. I was going around and visiting with some of the core artists about being in the exhibit, and one of those artists was Richard Reddow. He lives in his studio. It's just east of Kyle, and we talked about it, the exhibit, and of course he said he'd be happy to do a piece for it. And then just before I was leaving, he said, you know, one thing that whenever the old people would talk and tell him about Wounded Knee, at the end they would always say, why? And so I told him right then, I said, I really like that. And so then we just used the Lakota word for why rather than the English word. Hmm.
It seems like every exhibit that you do has these elements where you pull in, you know, different artists, and then there's an online component where I can learn so much online, even if I never make it into the exhibit itself. They're really thoughtfully put together. When you start planning something like this, how do you set the parameters for it? What are you trying to accomplish with an exhibit?
Well, we do want to make them educational, and we want to foreground these artists and these narratives in the most contemporary and exciting way we can. So it's always a challenge to come up with techniques or opportunities that we can explore. And our attitude is just that anything's possible. So we always have a long list of things that a wish list of what would be available in the exhibits, and what ends up being in the exhibits is a lot less than what we can envision. But time constraints and once in a while financial constraints are what limit what we can do.
All right. So tell us about Dock Away as an exhibit. What can viewers, participants expect?
Well, you can expect to see 28 artworks, two-dimensional and three-dimensional artworks by 30 Lakota artists, and then there's seven songs by Lakota musicians and seven poems by Lakota poets, and all those are in the exhibit. There's also the text. What we did was we didn't want to focus on the massacre. And so the massacre is the central part of the exhibit, but we wanted to begin with a positive, and that's the background to the ghost dance religion. And then we wanted to end with something positive, and this is ways to look at how Lakotas have commemorated the people who were massacred that day. So you can learn the context of the exhibit, of the massacre, but that's I guess that's not the core of what we're trying to do with the exhibit. We really do want to foreground these Lakota voices about what was going on. We're not trying to tell a encyclopedic story where you can get both sides. We figure people can get the mainstream viewpoint from texts and movies and so forth, but what has predominantly been underrepresented are Lakota viewpoints of that massacre. So that's some of the core things that you can learn there in the exhibit.
We had an author on this program not too long ago who had written a book called The Heartbeat of Wounded Knee, and one of the things he was using it as a you know, more of an expansive historic conversation with how many times scholars and people have portrayed this as the death of Indian culture. This was the end of something, and you know, sort of it's over now. And he was trying to say clearly right. that's not true. And I'm wondering if you could talk about that a little bit, as far as, you know, focusing on the positive aspects of the ghost dance and sort of the positive aspects of commemoration and a living culture now, contemporary artists now. That's part of that same sort of philosophy of, yeah, this is not the event that ended
right.
that ended a historic era.
Yes, and that's exactly what we're trying to do with this exhibit and previous exhibits, is to foreground the creativity of artists, Lakota artists today and into the future, and show the diversity also of Lakotas and Lakota art. So there's no one way to be Lakota, no one way to create Lakota art, or one way that Lakota art works. And with this exhibit, we also tried to expand the idea of community involvement, where people are invited to create small artworks, 5-inch square artworks that become part of the exhibit. And so that's one thing new that we put in here, because we just figured there would be a lot of people that have something to say mm-hmm. about that massacre.
And how is that project unfolding? Say more about that.
It's pretty neat. The inspiration for it was... There were two people that reported from Wounded Knee in 1891, November of 1891, so almost a year later. And what they reported was that, there were all these sticks out in the prairie, and on each stick was a flag, and that those represented where a relative had died. So mm-hmm. there was this idea that people were commemorating their relatives right away. It wasn't something that came later. They were doing it right away. And so the contemporary analog of that are these 5-inch square artworks that Lakotas and non-Lakotas can create now. And so it's to commemorate that. It's not to commemorate a specific person. It's just each person's commemoration of the people that were killed that day. Now, we have almost 200 of those square artworks, and those become part of the exhibit, and they travel with the exhibit. Our intention is to get to 300. That's the number we're using for how many people were killed that day in 1890 at Wounded Knee.
I was looking online at the logo, which is stunning in how it was created and all the details about it. And one of the things it was talking about is sort of crescent moon and the phases of the moon and how they were woven into the ghost dance. Will you tell me about that, the significance of the moon to the ghost dance itself and the lunar cycles?
Yeah, so the crescent moon was one of the icons that were used to represent the ghost dance at that time and still today. So the way it was represented on shirts and dresses and other possessions was just a crescent moon. I don't think it was tied to a specific time. And so when I created this logo, I drew a crescent moon. And then I got to thinking, I wonder what phase of the moon that really is. And that's when I did the research, and it's about a 4-day old, 4 days after a new moon. And it just happened. So then I went back and found out when was the new moon in 1890. And the new moon was December 11th. And so 4 days after that was December 15th, and that was the day that Sitting Bull was assassinated. So it kind of tied in directly to our... to the exhibit, because the assassination of Sitting Bull is one of the 7 sections to the exhibit.
Put that in context for people then. How does that sort of tie into what happens next as we lead up to the massacre itself, the assassination of Sitting Bull and others?
Well, so Sitting Bull was one of these, he was a great Lakota leader and a medicine man, a spiritual leader, and he did not promote the ghost dance, but he also did not participate in or condone it. So ghost dancers would ghost dance around where he lived along the Grand River. And the agent, McLaughlin, did not like that Sitting Bull was charismatic and a leader and was not against this ghost dance. So he sent the Indian police out to arrest him. And there's been a lot written about that. And so the attempt to arrest ended up in the deaths of around 14 Lakotas. So about half were policemen and the other half were Lakota civilians, including Sitting Bull and his son. And then the ghost dancers and Sitting Bull's followers then fled south after he was assassinated down to Bigfoot's people. Bigfoot is also known as Spotted Elk. And then Spotted Elk, it took a few days, and I think he was trying to strategize what his options were, because he was afraid he was going to be assassinated. And so he ended up deciding that they would come down to Red Cloud's people here in Pine Ridge Reservation. And that's what they were doing. They were on their way to the town of Pine Ridge where Red Cloud lived when they were intercepted at Porcupine Butte and on the 28th of December, and then the 29th was the massacre.
Hmm. You mentioned how quickly people were commemorating those who were lost with sticks and flags. What other efforts, and are there contemporary efforts? Let's talk about now and the opportunities and challenges now to do that kind of commemoration and sort of figure out how to communicate what happened and what happened afterwards.
Yeah. So the markers, as we said, the sticks with the flags was right away, and that basically has never stopped. Also in 1903, one of the survivors, Joseph Horncloud, who his parents and I think his wife and other relatives were killed that day, but he designed and paid for a monument on his own, and it cost around $350 back in 1903, and that's the monument that's on that logo. And it's the monument that's there at the gravesite today. If you go there, that's the monument. And so in 1903, the summer of 1903, that was dedicated. And the newspaper reports say there were around 5,000 people there for those 3 days of commemoration. So it had a lot of interest. There was a lot of interest in the United States acknowledging what went on. And basically, the United States has not. So one thread is this idea of some type of apology, perhaps, from the United States. Another is the rescinding of the Medals of Honor. There were 20 Medals of Honor awarded.
That's so hard for me to get my mind around. Of what those medals, you know, and there's been some stuff on Facebook recently because of, you know, the current political climate and a reminder that, you know, those medals were awarded, and people arguing they shouldn't be taken back, but Pulitzer Prizes are given back when there's plagiarism and other awards. I mean, there's certainly a precedent for important awards to be rescinded. It's hard for me to put myself in the position where they would have been awarded for that action at Wounded Knee.
Yeah, I think...
Why? You go back to that original word, you're like, why? What's in those? I haven't ever read the certificates, but...
It's all online for Valor, and there each, you know, is articulated what it was for, and it's the most medals of honor in U.S. history for any one military engagement by the Army, and so... Yeah, it seems the Army wanted to paint it out as though these were wild, savage, dangerous, murderous Indians that were killed, and so therefore they were justified in the actions that day. And we still see that in encyclopedic entries about what went on, trying to call it a battle rather than a massacre, not wanting to rescind or... I would say critically examine these medals of honor, and it's just ongoing that process of it's a stain on our nation's, on the United States history, and it seems like from our viewpoint it'd be really good just to acknowledge it and try to I don't know about correct wrongs, but acknowledge them and see if we can't get a more fairer viewpoint of what was going on, or what went on that day, at least.
as you did research for this exhibit, you know, based on your already, you know, extensive knowledge, were there surprises for you as you looked at this and did you fit pieces in that you weren't aware of?
Yeah, there were two big surprises that, because one of the things that we did in the exhibit was we did the weather report for every day from when Sitting Bull was killed until they finished burying everyone. So we have on there what we call the atmospheric, so when the sun rose and set, when the moon rose and set, the illumination of the moon, the high temperature and the low temperature for each of those days. And what... All of us, I think, or most of us, we know that it was bitter cold and there was snow everywhere the day of the massacre. And the facts is it was sunny and 66 degrees. And that was just shocking.
Really?
Yeah. And the next day it was still 56 degrees was the high. These were, it was just what I think is unseasonably warm and sunny days. Beautiful days weather-wise. otherwise, they were terrible days, but... So that was one thing that we found out from the weather reports and doing that type of research. Yeah. Another thing was this argument. Anyway, there's two viewpoints of whether there was sort of the killing that the United States Army did. Did they do it just in the heat of the battle, quote unquote, and it ended as soon as the officers could get control of these men who were just going wild? Or did they, was it... systemic, you know, all day
right.
long. And so the way we approached that was, okay, if the killing had been done, let's say in an hour, and no one contests that the killing started sometime in mid-morning. So they should have been done by noon if that was, if we're going to follow that line of reasoning, and then they would head to Pine Ridge. And, you know, it's 12 miles from Wounded Knee to Pine Ridge. And so we calculated out that transportation time. Anyway, they should have got there by late afternoon back to Pine Ridge. If the Lakota viewpoints were correct, which said the military kept shooting until dark, well, then we could use when sunset was, which was around 4:23, I believe, on that day of 29th, and then it would be sometime after 9 when they got back to Pine Ridge. Well, you can go and get the reports from the from Pine Ridge of when the military got back, and they got back after 9 o'clock.
Mm. It's Talkaway, an educational art exhibit about the Wounded Knee Massacre. You can see it at the Dahl Art Center now until May 15th, Friday, March 29th. There will be a guest curator talk at 6 p.m. local time and an artist reception from 5 to 7 at the Dahl. Craig Howe, this is so fascinating, and I can't wait to see it, this all in person and talk to you again about it. We appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Lori. I look forward to visiting with you.